Blog Talk Radio.
Poncho Sanchez.
Oh, boy, do I love that music. Poncho Sanchez, Eric. Sounds good, huh?
That's right, that's right. My name is Eric Payne. You're listening to the Kate Thompson Live Show on the GoPro Radio Network.
It's Kate Thompson Live. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just get ready to say I'm Eric Payne, and you are?
Kate Thompson,
that's my
and
mom
I'm live.
There you go, there you go.
How's it going, Eric?
All right, how are you, Ma?
I'm fine.
It's going okay. It's going okay. Since the last time I spoke to you,
I'm saying that because of this storm.
I'm
saying that because of the storm. Man, I'm telling you, it's really wild.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they are.
But, you know, I want to start the show tonight with, you know, talking about, you know, last weekend. You know, last weekend was quite a week, you know, what with the... Mary Baraka, you know, that funeral, and so many people, you know, at the different, you know, tributes to him. And then also over with the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, there was the NAACP that paid tribute to Sally Carroll, who has been the head of the NAACP in New Jersey for quite a while. And then also at TAC, they also celebrated during the celebration for Sally Carroll, they celebrated the Reverend Martin Luther King celebration, and the place was absolutely packed. So there's a lot of things going on. Now, also, we also know about, you know, the coming game, so I know you want to be talking about that and talking about Richard Sherman. But there's just one thing I want to talk about, and, you know, that is that four of five principals who spoke out against the Newark plan. And Newark, you know, they were opposed and they were suspended. They actually were told not to come back to the school. So that's a big story that we're going to probably get to on another time. I need more information.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like an interesting story. The teachers and stuff like that. I wanted to comment on the weather. You know, you said... We talked about the weather earlier. It's been kind of a deep freeze all across the country. And they talked about the polar vortex last week, and it seems like it's still hanging around. So kind of hard, you know, past couple of days. If people live in and around the area we are, you notice how bad it was, but it seems to be clearing up. So hopefully it'll clear up in time for the Super Bowl. Talked about that, and maybe it'll clear up in time for that. So,
you know, and that's going to be a really big event, especially around where we live, excuse me, and, you know, right down the street, I guess, from the, you know, where it's going to be happening. And they're expecting a ton of people. I don't know how in the world we're going to get back and forth, or maybe we should just not try.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Going back to one of the things in your list, you talked about Sally Carroll. What was the event, Sally
it
Carroll?
It was the tribute. Yeah, the tribute to Sally Carroll. And she was a former member of the NAACP National Board of Directors for so many years, you know, and the former past president of the Newark branch of the NAACP. And, of course, while she was president, I mean, she really, you know, did a lot for the organization, and she, you know, made sure that people were still excited about the organization. And a lot of people, you know, don't think in terms of the NAACP as being a viable organization, but you know what I think it really is. If not for them, a lot of things would not have happened, including the Reverend Martin Luther King.
Right, right. I'm just trying to remember how long it's been around, and you say course, the NAACP in history has, but Sally Carrol has been in a lifelong member, and you said she was an officer. What's her background? I remember you telling me some history about her.
Yeah, sure. She was a police person. Now, I'm not supposed to be giving her age.
Right.
But she was a member of the police department in Newark. As a matter of fact, I think she was the first female. And, you know, then she had a lot of other things that she was doing. You know, she started with an MCJ, Amelia Foundation, as a community organizer in Newark's West Side Park neighborhood. And she was with the County of Essex and the leadership, under the leadership of Barbara Bell Coleman. Let's see, she was part of a $12 million renovation of West Side Park. And it goes on and on and on and on. I mean, she has so many, you know, projects, special projects to her credit, you know, and she still functions.
Her relationship with the NAACP, she was an officer in the end. They were honoring her because, what was the reason they were honoring her?
She was elected to the National Board of Directors of the NAACP. And she retired after 18 years of service, and during that time she was appointed to chair the Committee of Branches by Julian Bond, who was the chairman of the National Board of Directors. And she was on the National Board of Directors, She's an active member of the National Association of Negro Business and Professional Women's Clubs, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Newark, the Newark Museum, the Newark Historical Society, et cetera, et cetera. And they were... The tribute was held at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, and it was packed. So I'm very glad to hear that, because she is quite a lady.
I believe you had said she was a past chapter president, right? She was the chapter president she did more than one term as the chapter president, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was. I don't know how many terms she, you know, I'm reading, but I don't get to the end of it. But she started very, very early. She, as a matter of fact, she was... around when Roy Wilkins, you know, was involved some years ago.
That's what I'm trying to get to with you, the questions, how long she had been around. I mean, to have been involved at one time with Roy Wilkins, kind of one of the leaders of certainly the civil rights movement, as well as other things, is very impressive. And just to have that history being passed down and her carrying some of that history with her is really kind of a remarkable thing for the area.
Well, I just found out the information that you're wondering about. She began in 1962, and she became involved with the Newark branch NAACP, and she still remains actively involved today. And in 1977, she was named by Governor Brendan Byrne and confirmed by the New Jersey State Senate to become the first woman to serve on the New Jersey State Parole Board. And she retired from that in 1991. One of the first women to be appointed to the Newark Police Department. Okay?
So
and still a whole list of other things, you know. I mean, she's a great lady. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
And it was appropriate. It was really appropriate that they celebrate her. And it was a real, very nice tribute. So another thing that happened, you know, that weekend, of course, with along with Amiri, which everybody is, you know, really still very sad about. Of course, we have
Amiri
been
Baraka,
running
the passing of Amiri Baraka.
That's right. And huge crowds at his wake and then the funeral the next day. So
in Newark, New Jersey, where they had
Newark,
and the funeral, people came out, and they had wasn't there also a memorial service for him as well, right? I think you were...
Yes, yeah.
We mentioned it.
I think it was at Symphony Hall, and then the other one was at a church in Newark, the Metropolitan Church, and it was absolutely huge. Oh. People were coming from all over the country and out of the country, because everyone has heard about, you know, Amiri Baraka. And, you know, his son Ras Baraka is a member of City Council, and his wife, Amina Baraka, jazz singer. Remember when we had her on the show? She's
I remember listening to the show, Amiri Baraka was quite a giant, and to know that he was so local, always stayed in Newark, born and bred in Newark, and spoke up for the people of Newark and for black people everywhere, as well as other minorities and people that were oppressed. It was a loud, strong, uncompromising voice. And when you're from the area and to have someone like this that's from your area, you kind of you don't realize the gravity of it. And of having a person of such stature in your midst, kind of on a, you know, on a regularity. Obviously, he was a friend of yours and friend of former congressman, late Congressman Donald Payne and Assemblyman William Payne, and being old school, old classmates of his. It's you kind of take it for granted having people like that around, and I always appreciate talking to Mr. Baraka, and having studied him in college and things like that, I began to realize just exactly what a giant this man was, and how many people he affected as you go around the world and you hear the people and watch the various TV shows that have praised him and speak about him. He really had a pivotal place in Black American Black history in the United States and for African Americans. So we were blessed to have him in our midst. Certainly blessed to be from the same hometown and say I was born in the same city as him, and having gone in the same field. I said it before that just knowing that he was from the area I was from kind of encouraged me a little bit as I embarked on a career in entertainment and film and television and acting business. But also the fact that you know, I was watching an interview of him earlier today, Community Access in here in New Jersey, and he was talking about art being for something, you know, there's the notion that art should be for some sort of movement. It shouldn't just be for art's sake. You should do it to bring attention to an issue or a plight or someone's story. And art without some sort of political or moral a direction or push is not really, it's just, you know, it's not, you're wasting your time making that type of art, basically. The gist of what I'm getting that he believed with is that if you should create, when you create art, you're creating it to say something, to establish something, to change something, to affect something.
Absolutely.
And to people that just want to do it for art's sake or be in front of the camera, so to speak, that's not really addressing a political need or a social issue, is kind of a waste in his eyes. And it really challenges us, those of us that are artists, to make something to bring a light to certain issues and to have that affect us. So it was really, when I think about his contributions, it really, every time I think more about him, I think how disappointed I am that now that I'm back on the East Coast, I didn't get a chance to talk to him. Many things.
Also, you know, he had written several books, and one of the books that he wrote I had used as a guide for, you know, when I taught a course out at William Patterson College, and that was Blues People, because I called him and said, look, I'm teaching a course out there, and I don't know what I'm doing. What do you suggest? And he suggested some things, and I really appreciate that, because he was a good friend. He also was a jazz aficionado. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Aficionado?
Aficionado. Yeah, that's close. That's close enough. But I remember a play that he did and that he wrote for New Jersey PAC. And it started with a thing on the stage that just looked like material. And then before the program started, you heard all this great music. And then as you watch this thing on the stage in the Victoria Hall at New Jersey PAC, it got bigger and bigger. It was a big balloon, a huge balloon of a person, a black musician, playing the piano. And it engulfed the entire stage. It was absolutely fantastic. And I remember that quite well. And he did that. And Amina was there. And she sang. And they were there. So everybody who saw that years ago, it was quite an impression. It left quite an impression on me. To have that level of, you know, talent and comprehension. As if to say, music, you know, makes the world. So really, really good stuff.
Right. He was just an incredible talent and a spokesman and an activist for black people, and we're just about on a minute before our break, but we just wanted to give respects to Mary Baraka and condolences to his family, and you know, certainly understand them, how they feel in this time of difficulty. So our hearts go out to them, certainly.
So I think we're going to be taking a break about now. Is that so?
Yeah, I think we are getting ready to go to a break in a couple of seconds. And just a couple of things we're going to be talking about. I want to get into talking about, you know, the obvious Chris Christie issue, and just what's going on with there, just kind of a cursory thing, and some other things that seem to be going on in the in our nation from a political standpoint that affects every single American. So we're going to talk about that as well. But we'll be back on the other side of this break. Stay with us on the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne, and that's my mom there.
Kay Thompson.
Your name. There you go.
Kay Thompson.
There you go.
We'll
there
be
you
right
get
back.
It.
We'll be right back, everyone. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed on GoPro Radio Network shows are solely those of the speakers and are not necessarily the views or opinions of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. or its affiliates. These broadcasts are provided on the understanding that they do not constitute professional advice or services. Individuals who speak in these broadcasts express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. GoPro Radio Networks and its affiliates do not necessarily endorse or oppose any particular opinion or conclusion discussed in these broadcasts. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute these broadcasts in any way without the express permission of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. GoPro Radio Networks assumes no liability for any of your activities in connection with these broadcasts or for your use of these broadcasts in connection with your website, computer, or playing device.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we're back on the Kay Thompson Live Show on the GoPro Radio Network, fastest growing network in the universe, on the Kay Thompson Live one and only show. I'm Eric Payne, and that's my mom over there in Secaucus. Yeah, when I say
yeah,
that's
I
my
we,
mom,
we should...
you say your name is, in case people don't
Kay
know
Thompson.
Who my mom is. There you go.
Yes,
on the Kay
do.
Thompson Live.
Kay Thompson. But, you know, there's one
to.
Thing... We have to tell people that, you know, the weather is still so very bad out. And it was a blizzard yesterday, and it is very, very cold. And we want people to be very, very careful walking along the streets and, you know, just be careful driving. Make sure you drive slower because there's black ice out there, and it's very dangerous. But the point is, you know, I want to let people know that you and I are in two different cities right now. So, and
mm-hmm.
that's why, you know, it sounds as if, it may sound as if we're together, but Eric is in one city, and I'm in another city. So we don't know what's happening, you know, in the studio, but we can always rely on the people at GoPro Radio Network. That's Shauna Glover, and that's Ayanna Jones, and that's Ty Washington, and the rest of the crew there at GoPro Radio in Jersey City, New Jersey. So we're all in the same area, but we are in two different places this time. But, you know, one thing I also want to talk about, you know, what did I want to talk about? Oh, Reverend Martin Luther King, you know, somewhat, you know, I don't know, but it's like we didn't pay a lot of attention almost. That's the way I feel, to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, I think because there was so many other things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, you know, we have to think in terms of that were he alive, you know, he would be working on economic justice, for instance, fair wages, because there's still a lot of families with very young children, and these kids are going hungry. That's not fair.
Right.
You know, and then, and for instance, the government should be paying attention to that. In New Jersey, I'm talking really about, you know, the state government. You know, we'll be talking about Governor Chris Christie in a minute. But also, he would be working on comprehensive immigration reform. You know, there's
mm-hmm.
so many people living in the shadows, you know, in the immigration bill that, you know, people have to be, you have to have citizenships in order to, their citizenship intact in order to become a viable person in the United States and also to receive, you know, the things that they need, you know, to live here. Also, people with no jobs are living in the streets with children. What kind of nonsense is that? You know, you see the kids out there and they're living actually in the streets, you know? It doesn't so, and Dr. King would be talking about this. You know, he would make a real case for it. And he doesn't need to have a case. You shouldn't have to talk so much about this at this day and age, in this day and time. This is ridiculous. People are living on the streets. Kids are living on the streets. They're not eating well. There's not enough food. There's not enough money. So therefore, people would say, oh, you're involved with politics. Yeah, you're damn right I'm involved with politics. I'm going to be involved with in politics until things start to change, and change for African-American and Latino people and all people. So my speech.
Right, right, right. Well, I I certainly think that Dr. King would really, one of his issues would certainly be immigration and bringing people out of the shadows and have those, I guess it's 12 million people or something like that. I forget how many million.
But yeah.
It's a number about that high. Getting them to be able to take part in the American dream, that certainly would be an issue of his. Other, also, another obvious issue is extending unemployment insurance. Really, it would be about jobs, doing the best you can have to put people back to work and bring people. There's still a large
really,
number of people
what?
That... He would be about jobs, putting people.
I think I'm losing Eric on this phone.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello.
Anyway, I think that he would really be about jobs and putting people, trying to get people back to work in regards to you know, having programs that would come up with a way to create jobs other besides the fact of extending unemployment benefits, which is a big issue now that. They're talking about, but certainly he would probably encourage our leaders to not leave behind the people, the least of us, the people that have the least and have the limited amount of resources and influence and access, that he would urge us not to forget about those people and to make sure that everybody has an opportunity. So I think that's probably what Dr. King would do, and he'd be shocked. I'd probably would be pretty kind of shocked at the fact that some things are almost they're almost trying to take him back to 1968, to those years before he was killed. So I think he'd probably be a little surprised about some things as well, and the vitriol of some people. So those are a great number of things. And I didn't see too much about his holiday, about the L.L. King Day. Unfortunately.
Yeah, see, that's what I was concerned about, you know.
But, you know, we have to take it upon us to remember and honor him and, you know, walk our lives in akin to the things that he tried to teach, you know, and tried to get people to understand and agree that, you know, for people to really truly have kind of a humanity and brother and sisterhood, we have to really be concerned about each other. And that's kind of a bottom line thing, and it just seems like a lot of people don't really care about each other. There's not a moral baseline from which we can establish or some systems of some kind of rules of acting. Some decorum is basically what I'm trying to say. A moral baseline that compels each human being to have a certain minimal amount of concern for another human being. And that seems to have been eroded in this country, and by certain more very powerful organizations or people or rich people, they put forth a kind of a philosophy and a way of thinking about life, and they use the lesser intelligent, less influenced, less money, less rich people to achieve those objectives. And they kind of, you know, appeal to those people who might not have the intelligence or might not be able to see things as clearly as other people, and they prey upon that weakness of those people, and they get them to believe that sometimes, you know, that you have to look out for yourself at the expense of other people. And that seems to have been a kind of philosophy or a kind of emotion that has permeated in our society within the last, maybe since Obama's been elected, maybe even before. Kind of an I got mine, now you have to get yours kind of mentality in our society. And it's not always that simple, you know. So,
you know, I find it very interesting that here President Obama is in his second term, and he really said the other day that he knows that some people just don't like the fact that they have a black president.
That's true.
Racism still exists, yeah.
And it's really unfortunate, because some of those people might fall in that very demographic that I'm talking about, and that would benefit from him being president. You know, I mean, some of these people, some of these Tea Party individuals, are you know, they're working class people. They're working poor, some of them. And they go along with the Tea Party because they kind of buy into it. And I think some might be, you know, their racism might show its head. I mean, you could tell by the language that some of them use, even though they claim they're not racist or prejudiced or mad at the fact that the president of the United States is now a black man. But you could tell in the language that they use that they are really at their core. It's based in their racism and their hatred. And it's unfortunate because they go against things that would benefit themselves. Kind of like, you know, I saw a statistic that West Virginia, you know, West Virginia in the presidential election went for Mitt Romney. West Virginia went for non-regulation of the environment and things like that. So,
yeah.
And EPA rules and standards. So what happens, and it comes back to bite them in the butt, is that you have one of the chemical companies down there and that is a part of the coal industry, has a spill that gets into the water supply, and these people can't drink their water or touch their water for a week and a half. Now, because at one point they had an opportunity to vote their interest, but they didn't. And this is what happens. And sometimes they get hoodwinked, so to speak, if I can borrow from Malcolm X, and they go along with this kind of ideology that really is in contrast to what they need for their life and to have a happy and healthy life and be able to have a productive life. And it's really a shame. You know, but it's been a tactic that has been used in our country for hundreds of years, which was one of the reasons used why they didn't want to let slaves be free, you know. So it's really unfortunate that, you could have people not being able to drink their water for over a week, not even be able to touch the water. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And one of the main things that the governor and even Joe Manchin, the senator, they went out of their way to stress the fact that this has nothing to do with the coal companies. This has nothing to do with the coal industry. This is a chemical company. And whenever somebody, you know, Shakespeare said, I think they doth protest too much, you know.
Too much, right.
Because they must have something high, because that's one of the first things they said. Don't blame it on the coal industry. But the chemical is used in the manufacture of coal. So even if it's not a direct relation, it's indirect a relationship and an indirect cause and effect, because this chemical wouldn't even be in the area if it wasn't for the coal industry. So,
you know,
sometimes I think our country is up for sale, and perhaps maybe it might be to some of these big corporations and to some of these politicians, and there are very few people fighting the good fight, but it really is a scary when you think about the lengths to which people are willing to go and the extent of their network that they can put out. This is the press statement that we're all going to go by, and we're all going to – this is the talking points. And see, everybody gets – and it seems like everybody gets the same talking points when they have a certain agenda, and they all fall in line. And it's really a shame that seems to be so prevalent. To me, it seems to be prevalent in our country. Maybe it's always been prevalent, and we're just now able to see it with the advent of the Internet and that type of journalism coming into fruition. But – it really is despicable at times that the average person just trying to make a living and support their family and just to live and survive has to go through the daily hell that they go through just to survive in this country, and that there are individuals that can affect the people that can affect their very lives, you know, choose not to. I mean, 1.5 million Americans are going whose unemployment benefits have been expired. And because they don't want to act, Congress, the Republicans don't want to act, these people are still without the few dollars that they were getting. And as everybody knows, who's ever been on unemployment, who's ever lived paycheck to paycheck, and I see we're going to have to go to a break in about another 2 minutes, anybody that goes paycheck to paycheck knows that that money is important, you know. That little bit amount of money that comes into them every week is something that they rely on. And
that's right, they have to live on.
Exactly, Ma. And the fact that there are some people who are willing, who are in judgment of that, who whether they say yes or no, will decide whether those Americans will get another check and eat maybe that week. You know, it's a sad thing. And the fact that they talk about, they bring up all these excuses. Well, it has to be paid for. Well, unemployment extensions haven't been paid for before in the past. Even under George Bush's administration, they've extended it. You know, and this is what I'm talking about in this country, this mentality of says some people that's acceptable that some people can starve. You know, and the fact that if we can help somebody and keep them from starving and it costs you, and I got to come out of my pocket. But if I'm going to keep a person from starving, I might just have to take that hit to my pocket.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's going to hurt me for the day or until I get home or whatever, maybe, you know, maybe I'll give this guy my last dollar. If it means the difference between him starving and not. And this is the mentality that seems to be prevalent in our country by some of these people. They were literally willing to let people starve.
Yeah.
Letting people starve.
Okay, Eric, I think it's time for us to take a
break, we got a little bit more time. Rather than let them allow them to eat. So I mean it's really something, and I'm just talking about the unemployment extensions. We're coming up on 1 minute to our break. So that was something that was in the news as of recently, whether the Republicans would allow the measure to even come to the floor, meaning will they allow it to even be discussed, whether we should discuss unemployment benefits. And that's a sad thing when they don't even want to do that and are willing to allow people to go hungry. So you know, we are at our break now, and we're going to come back on the other side on the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne, and that is...
And I'm
my mom,
Kay Thompson.
Kay Thompson.
We'll be right back. Yes.
All right.
GoPro Radio, the fastest growing network in the galaxy, is leaner and meaner with a new attitude, new technology, and a brand new lineup. Tune in and get wired every Wednesday, starting at 5 p.m. Eastern with the BCS Experience featuring Byron C. Saunders, formerly of New York City's WBAI. Then at 6 p.m., it's the Black Agenda TV Express featuring sought-out political commentator Glenn Ford, formerly of America's Black Forum. Then at 8 p.m., it's time for Kay Thompson Live with the legendary radio host Kay Thompson of Inner City Broadcasting's WLIB and her son, renowned actor Eric Payne, who starred in such films as Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, Drop Squad, and many more. Then, at 9 p.m., it's Food Wrap, featuring Nina Markel, a.k.a. the unofficial mayor of Jersey City, and former Viacom marketing guru Shauna Glover. Last but not least, at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Sexy Party Show with the bad boy of dating Mr. Locario of I Love New York fame and his partner in crime, Miles Cunningham. So get wired every Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern only on the GoPro Radio Network, www.goproradio.com. Listen to the voices in your head.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And I think we are back. I'm Kay Thompson on Kay Thompson Live. And
I'm Eric Payne on the Kay Thompson Live on the GoPro Radio Network.
Yes. Still, I think there's going to be snow to come. I'm not sure, but it sure feels like it. But you know what? I'm looking at now, we were talking about so many people being really not concerned about their fellow human beings. And I want to get to the George Washington Bridge scandal with Governor Christie here in New Jersey. But you know what makes me angry, Eric, is this growing business of putting people in jail for long periods of time for small offenses. And, of course, the main majority of the people that they put in jail for these minority offenses are minority people, maybe black and Latino people, you know, and all of a sudden you have full jails of people who probably maybe shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. Or if they should, that some of the crimes are so minor. But then again, you know, minority people get more sentences, longer sentences than anybody else. Let's address that for a minute.
Right. That's very true. That's been something that's, like you said, it's been an issue that people have been fighting, activists have been fighting, journalists like yourself have been bringing to the forefront for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
For years, for at least 20, 25 years. I mean, when you were on LIB, those were issues that you were talking, that was were in the news and were issues that you guys were fighting back then and trying to bring attention to. So it's still been going on, but now, I mean, it's been revealed, you know, the whole prison pipeline thing where they're, you know, almost getting the kids out of grade school and just, kind of steering them directly to making them have records and files and things that seem to follow
yeah.
them their whole life, but also kind of
well,
gear
them.
Well,
this is big business. You know, this is
big
business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the jails are a business. It's an industry. There are people
who
invest in the prison industry.
Right, it's privatized. The prison industry is now privatized
sure.
in many places across the country. And I actually saw on a documentary, you know, that they do on the prison thing. It might have been on MSNBC. At one prison, you know, the people joke about back in the day when the prison, you know, they were making license plates, inmates were making license plates, and that was always a running
yeah.
gag. But I know in California there was, when I first started hearing about it, that they were making jeans in some jails. They had the inmates manufacture jeans. And, you know, and I think at one time it was kind of a marketing thing, you know, there were prison-made jeans or whatever, and that was a big thing. So it always had its kind of appeal, and obviously the big corporations, realized, I guess, that they can have people working for them and basically don't have to pay them very much. And this particular
That's
show
right.
was about
yeah.
One prison in out west somewhere, where they weren't doing the usual making jeans or doing this or whatever. These guys had a fish farm at
mm-hmm.
this prison, and this prison would have, you know, they would raise the fish that people would buy in the local supermarkets. And they would
Good
say
Lord.
Farm-raised. You know, when they say farm-raised fish, you know, the fish
yeah.
are raised on a farm that a farmer or somebody has, and they have the tanks and whatever, and they, you know, they farm the fish and feed them or whatever. So they take care of them as opposed to out in the wild catching fish and stuff like that. So in the prison, they had a farm, a fish farm in this prison. It was tilapia was the product that they were producing. And the inmates, you know, everybody was happy. And from the prison side, the inmates got to make a little money. They're out in the fish farm learning the skill. They were happy, even though they were getting paid way less than minimum wage, maybe $1 a day, $1 an hour, something, some crazy price. Almost like slave labor, prison labor, and but it was more than they would have been making, and it got them outside and outdoors, and they're learning a trade that they could come out then and go in the industry. But they also talked to the local farmer in the area, who had his own fish farm, and his whole issue was like, yeah, I can't compete with them. I got to pay people. I have expenses. They don't have to pay their labor, and it was putting this gentleman out of business. So it brought up the issue not only of these industrialized prisons and prisons for profit, but what they're doing to the larger community, you know, people who have regular businesses that are not really exploiting labor. That's what these things
yeah.
are doing. But that seems to be, like mm-hmm. you said, it's a big thing now. And people buying stock in these corporations that have stock in these companies that are privatized prisons. And it's kind of a shame that we're using labor like that, you know. But,
sure, and that's the reason too for, you know, arresting so many minority people. Let's face it, you know, it's a form of slavery. There's no doubt
yeah,
about it in my mind.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the majority of people that they're still arresting and trying to put in jail are African American or Latino, and
yeah.
Keep them a part of that system. And like we said earlier, with the issues with the schools a little bit. You wanted to touch on education. Well, the issue with the schools now is such that this, and I'm just speaking as a very a pedestrian knowledge of this, but the, you know, how they have this zero policy now and zero tolerance
yes.
policy now for people who might be aggressive or violent and different kinds of things. You know, a kid could draw a gun draw a picture that has a guy with a gun, and it could be a child who's just drawing an old-fashioned kind of cowboy dude or whatever, like little boys do. But in some cases, I've heard they want to kick the kid out of school, and he's a terrorist, and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? That might be the case in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
But other times,
well,
you know,
Eric, in New York, let me
just finish
this
one point really quickly.
Because
it is exactly what I'm saying. In certain areas, they're going overboard, is all I'm saying. You know, they're overreacting. Yeah, and in doing that. So you were going to say, you're saying
yeah.
in Newark?
Yeah, when I was talking about the 4 of 5 suspended principals spoke out against a Newark plan, and this is in the school system, but they were fired and they were suspended. And what had happened was that they were told that they couldn't come back into the school, you know, And what had happened was that they had gotten a letter from, I'm trying to read you this information, that was obtained by the Star Ledger, and it says that an investigation had been launched regarding an incident that occurred on or about as a result of that gave the date. And it says, as a result, suspension is effective immediately. You are not to report to any Newark public school. Now, they had made the principal, you know, were speaking out against what had happened for the Newark plan. I don't know exactly what the Newark plan is, but it involves closing a number of different schools in Newark. And so these principals had spoken out. Now, you know what this looks like to me? They want to bar freedom of speech. Since when can't principals speak out? Since when can't teachers speak out about something that is wrong? Okay,
right,
the superintendent whose name is Cammie Anderson needs to be aware.
Okay, yeah, that's just one more issue. Than what we were just talking about, it's one more issue in terms of education and things that are the problem. I mean, the issue with the Newark school system, from what I understand it, is that they just have outside control. It doesn't really seem to be too beholden or too
aware.
Concerned about what the local people in the community are concerned about. So that's what that particular sounds like. I would suppose closing those down, as we were talking about the prison pipeline, I would suppose that when you start closing schools down, that kind of all leads to the same place. Bring it back to kind of synergize it. That kind of all leads to the same place in terms of children getting lesser education and ending up in bad situations than what they were.
And these teachers were pretty progressive also. They would speak out against something that was not good for the students or for the teachers. So I think that people in Newark, New Jersey, and in any of the other city better be aware, because the fact that a lot of things are changing with education that probably should not be based on money, okay? Because I'm sure that it has to be based on some sort of money, because the fact that if you're going to be laying off or getting rid of principals and teachers, then you're going to be saving quite a lot of money, aren't you?
Yeah.
And it has to go somewhere.
Maybe it's going to somebody's campaign.
Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe, but let's let's not really point in any direction in particular. Do we know the parameters of what might have happened? Now, we said we didn't really know the details, so we just know that. Now, what were the facts again that you knew, that several teachers were fired?
No, they weren't fired. They were told that they were not to come back to school. And it says a video on YouTube shows four of the administrators, with mayoral candidate and Newark Councilman Ras Baraka, who was on leave as principal of Central High School, and they had a meeting at Hopewell Baptist Church. Now, the meeting was held, I understand, to oppose the superintendent, who is Cammie Anderson. I think she's from New York. To oppose her reorganization plan. Now, the reorganization plan is, I'm not sure I'm going to be trying, I'm going to be doing some research on it between now and next week. But what's happening is that the schools that are being closed, you know, are being made into special other schools, and they are Burgoyne Avenue School, Belmont Runyon School, Maple Avenue School, where I used to teach, by the way, which was in the South Ward. And the South Ward has become, a ward of some concern. There's no doubt about it. But the point is, the teachers are still there, yes?
You're listing the schools.
What?
That's right. Where these principals were
suspended. Four out of five suspended principals when they spoke out against what was happening, down in the office, the head office. So I'm going to keep an eye on this and see exactly what's going on.
Right. It certainly sounds
like somebody's out of touch with what's going on in Newark, educationally.
Right.
That's the whole plan.
Right. That sounds like it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. No,
okay.
I ended that,
But
what I'd like to do now is to get to,
and we have about
30
minutes.
What about the football player, Sherman?
Right. We're coming up on a break in just
why
about 15.
Why would he be? Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's save that for the other side of this break because we have to go to a break just about now, I believe. So we're going to go for a break, and we're going to talk about the recent the situation with this football player, Richard Sherman. So
football player.
Come on
right.
back mm-hmm. to the Kay Thompson Live show on GoPro Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we're back to the Go K Thompson Live show on the GoPro Radio Network. I'm Eric Payne, and I'm also the co-host here with my mom, Kay Thompson.
Yes, and, I'm right here. I'm right here.
All right.
Now, you were talking about Sherman. Richard Sherman is his name, football player?
I believe that's his name.
Why are they getting on his case so much? Because he yelled out and was, you know, doing some trash talking?
Right. I think from what I understand, I haven't really been paying attention to it, but from what I understand, the way he responded at the end of the show, at the end of the game, wasn't really as sportsmanlike. He didn't show that great kind of sportsman conduct. But like you said, he was just trash talking, and he was caught up in the moment. And you know, those kind of, you know, whenever your athletes do stuff like that, it kind of makes them seem self-absorbed and kind of a jerk and not being a good sport. But I guess they were talking trash back and forth in the press, and he was amped up, and so that's what he did. I certainly, you know, I don't care for that type of over-the-top. He's too over-the-top sometimes, and you seem like an ass. But
as some of the reporters were saying. Why should he be called a thug?
It appears that that's been the case, and even on, you know, some of the social media, people have been, obviously, certain people, they always go straight to race. That's their move.
Yeah.
So they went straight to the racial thing and started talking about him like that, so... you know,
thug,
I mean, we got a large
N-word, right?
Well, I mean, those people probably call them a thug. Probably that brings up that notion for them in their heart. That's mm-hmm. another image mm-hmm. of black people that they're waiting to go there from. And you know, guys have been doing that. I guess the way he came off, and you know, was it in bad taste? Yes, in my personal opinion.
Yeah,
it wasn't
bad taste,
really necessary,
sure, but not worthy of all that kind of press.
Go overboard and talk about him being a thug, and they want to call him the N-word and all kind of stuff like that. And so, wow, those are some fast minutes. But anyway, I'm just talking to our engineer there. but, yeah, it's just unnecessary. But, you know, that's where we live in America. Nothing surprises me anymore at some of these people that are still racially motivated to make things seem always about race. But that's what they want to do. They want to go to the N-word. And it's unbelievable. But, you know, the hell, what am I saying? This is why I don't have a problem with Barack Obama being president. And a lot of people that are very progressive do. And there's this one particular deal that's going through, a particular trade deal that a lot of progressive, and the more I'm finding out about it, the more I probably don't agree with the president moving on it. But here's the thing for me.
What's that?
About Barack Obama being president as opposed to being the first black president as opposed to other presidents. I say, if he makes a mistake, let the brother gets a mistake. And this might be very racial. But here's what it is for me, because this is the country that I was brought up in, and this is what they told me, how we live. I say, how many mistakes does the white dude get? Then the brother gets as many mistakes as the white dude. What, the brother gets five? The white guy gets five, and the brother gets five. I don't care what goes on, the brother gets as many mistakes as the white boy gets. Now, I don't want to say it like that, but they have made us have to turn around and respond in that manner. They've called him everything, and they've been the criticism on him has been ridiculous. And the fact that they've decided that they wouldn't work with him at all once he got elected is just ridiculous. So, you know, I don't mind if people want to get racial. I don't mind. I don't care. We get racial if you want, because I know who I am. You know, and when you're brought up being proud and you know your history, you don't mind getting racial because you know what? You got some stuff to be proud about your race. So, yeah, let's get racial because I got a whole lot of ammunition despite what they try to teach us.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Despite the way they try to rewrite history, they'll never change the truth. And that's really why they hate you. So don't let me get on my Malcolm X and my FOI, my Fruit of Islam and all that. But it's just funny to me when people, you know, really try to come down on the first African-American president. And there were so many people that worked so hard for this issue. That's why sometimes I have an issue with certain media personalities who, A, really are just trying to get their notoriety up by criticizing him, and we know that what that's all about. But I certainly understand different points of view. And you know, Congressman Payne himself has different points of view than the president. But the bottom line is we got his back. We should have his back at least anyway. Instead of pointing out all the things that he does. And
of course.
You know, that's so that's my rant on it. I mean, I might have other things to say. I don't know what you feel, Ma, about that, but
the same way.
Interested to hear your perspective. Know? You've been around a little bit longer than I have, so maybe you're a little bit
more. No, I think he's a very fine president. I think he's doing exactly what he can do and should do, and I think we're going to see even more work coming from him, you know, regarding minorities, and I put that in quotes, you know, in this country. I mean, everybody should be treated equal, and until that we're not, they're not, we are not being treated equal, okay? But just think of the numbers that we have, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon we're going to be as organized as, you know, other groups. So it behooves everyone to really try to get along with each other and to do what is fair. And when we talk about fair, you know, I want to talk about the Chris Christie administration there. You know, I mean, come on. You know, with the bridge thing, either he didn't really know, which I don't believe, because either he didn't know about the George Washington Bridge being closed, or he did. But the point is, I can't believe that the head of the state of New Jersey didn't know exactly what was going on.
Right,
okay?
Right.
If not, he set that atmosphere in place for something as stupid as that to go on and as dangerous as that, which is lucky we didn't have any deaths from closing a bridge, the largest bridge in the world. Come on.
That's true, yeah. And we got about 2.5 minutes to break to the end of the show, actually. But, yeah, it is. It seems that there's and more is coming out every day, and it seems like that there's more to this particular story than the bridge and them trying to get back at a particular person. And then it also seems that the person they was originally thought that they were trying to get back at wasn't that person at all. And it seems like it's about more things than just the bridge. And that seems to be the modus operandi, the standard operating procedure of the Christie administration, strong-arming, bullying, and trying to just assert their power. And it's all coming down on them now, sure enough.
Why in the world would he get rid of the one black judge on the United States Supreme Court?
That's ironically, and we got 2 minutes to the end of the show, that's ironically what started this whole thing when people start looking back and backtracking about what started causing when he decided not to renew the John Wallace, I believe, Justice Wallace's tenure and make it permanent. That's when the Democrats on the Senate committee would have to approve the next judge and said, well, since you broke protocol and did this, we're not going to approve any of your judges. So, and that's when it all started, and believing that he was more powerful than everybody else, I guess this is something that he tried to really blow up, and they tried to really seem in a very kind of what it seems to be a very coordinated way to get to deal with their enemies. So we're coming just up about on the end of the show, I think that we've run out of time. We've covered a lot of issues tonight. Thanks for joining the Kay Thompson Live Show on GoPro Radio Network. I'm the son, Eric Payne. That is my mom, the one, the only, the legendary. What's your name?
Kay Thompson.
There you go. There it is, straight from the legend's mouth. Thanks for joining us. Join us again next week.
Joe Sanchez.